You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast. The Purple Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus, making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
Hey, State Nation, another edition of the Purple Project Podcast is live and rocking and rolling on this Thursday night, May 20th, 2021. This is episode 52 of Triple P, where, of course, the title of the podcast pretty much writes itself. Usually, we talk about, K-State Athletics on the podcast, and a little extra on a podcast as well, all about the Wildcats and what they're doing athletically from the fall, spring, winter, you name it. We got it here on the podcast. We try to at least cover all things K-State. And before I bring on Alex, my co-host, for the weekly edition of these podcasts, of course, you can go find the Purple Project Podcast wherever you can find, wherever you listen to podcasts, whether that's going to be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon, radio.com, and more. The Purple Project Podcast, you can find it wherever your podcasts are found, and it should be found along with the rest of the K-State Wildcat podcasts that are currently out there as well. So go check it out. And also, if you missed out on any of the dailies from this week or last week, please go download, check it out. Tell your fellow K-State friends and graduates who just graduated from K-State. Again, another shout out to all the students who graduated from K-State last weekend, graduation weekend here in Manhattan, fighting the weather. It's been raining on and off throughout the weekend, through last weekend and into this week. Hopefully the last of it is behind us here, but scheduled rain should be popping up going into next week as well. But play it by ear as usual. But now, enough rambling. It's time to get on with the podcast and bring on my co-host who's living out there in San Diego, California. His name, Alex Aiden. Alex, what's happening?
Not too much happening, Eddie. Good to be back with you on a Purple Project podcast here, the weekly edition. By the way, you've been doing a great job with dailies. Dailies have been very informative, so encourage people to check those dailies out. I think I want to echo what you just said, Eddie. Congrats to the graduates of the 2021 class at K-State. I remember when I graduated 6 years ago now, and it was, wow, that's crazy, 6 years ago. But that's insane, Eddie. It doesn't feel like it was 6 years ago. Anyway, when I graduated 6 years ago, it was truly a special moment and feeling for me, because while it was the four most difficult years of my life from an academic standpoint, it was four of the best years of my life at the same time, because of the people that I met, the friends that I made, the sporting events, and the community at those sporting events, being able to come together as one, as a student body, and being able to watch K-State do their thing on the field, on the court, wherever it was. It was just an amazing 4 years. And so when it came to an end, graduating, it was something where you felt so great because you accomplished this feat. And it's kind of on the flip side, though, you were sad because you were about to, let go of something that had been so great for 4 years. So it's a bittersweet thing, but it's definitely a huge accomplishment. So kudos to everybody who was able to graduate. I know that it wasn't the typical walk the stage in Bramlage, which is what I did, and I'm sure that's what you did.
That's what I did as well. Yep, that's what I did.
But still, either way, it's a great accomplishment. And 6 years later, out here in Southern Cali, talking with you, Eddie. So ready to dive into the podcast. Everything is good out here. Not a lot of rain, had a little over the weekend, but not like you guys. So it's getting good. The weather's nicer out. I went to a bonfire with some friends the other night. And so, like I said, you know, post-COVID, you know, things beginning to get back to normal out here. That's really, really nice. So, you know, just getting out and enjoying Southern Cali, but making time to talk with you, to talk K-State sports, because we have a lot to talk about. And Eddie, I have to be honest, I lost it on one of your dailies. It was the daily when you realized mid podcast, you realized that K-State got no hit and gave up four errors in a game against the Jayhawks, and you said, "Did they really pull an Atlanta Braves?" And then you're like, "No, they did pull an Atlanta Braves." Oh my gosh! Like you could, like mid podcast, you couldn't believe it. I was dying. That was so funny. It made K-State getting no hits and four errors against KU funny for like 2 minutes. So thank you for that. That little bit of comedic relief. And making that at least palatable.
Yeah. I mean, K-State there. I mean, if they don't make it to the postseason, you can go back and look at that series and what would have been. I mean, I've said it on the dailies.
That's the Baylor series. There were two eggs, man. Two big eggs laid.
Yeah, we're recording on a Thursday where, speaking of K-State baseball, that's a good transition going into the baseball where K-State and on the dailies, I talked about it, previewing the TCU series, which started tonight, and game one just wrapped up. K-State takes game one, 4-2, behind Jordan Wicks, big outing here for him, almost going 8 innings, 7 2/3, had 117 pitches, 7 strikeouts, 2 walks, 2 runs. Both of them were unearned for him. Strikeout rating goes up. He came in this game leading the Big 12 in strikeouts, and he did his job in K-State offensively. Did just enough to get the number one conference leading TCU 4-2 in the ball game. TCU came in here, of course, leading the Big 12, and now with that loss, K-State just hit it to them. They're now tied up top of the Big 12 standings as I speak, as we're recording right now. Actually, a half game, if you will, behind in front of Texas, 16-6. TCU is now, and we're talking conference records now. Texas 15-6. Meanwhile, your Wildcats 9-13 now on the year, but overall 30-20 now on the season. I said it all week long that K-State probably has one of the better records at home in the Big 12 Conference to date, and they needed to get at least 2. I said that yesterday, and I'm going to say it again here tonight. They need at least get 2 from TCU. Well, that's 1. Check that off the list there. So Jordan Wicks finally gets some run support there, what he did not against KU there in what was a disappointing doubleheader for them, as Alex, what you just mentioned there. Jordan Wicks gets the win. Russell Smith gets the loss for TCU. He went less than 5 innings, just 4 2/3. 6 hits given up, 4 runs, all of them unearned, 6 strikeouts for him. He gave up no walks. Eric Torres with the save for the Cats, and just, he got 5 outs, inning in 1/3. He pitched 27 pitches, was thrown in tonight. Torres struck out 4 Horned Frogs in the ball game tonight for K-State. Huge, huge game, huge series to get for the Cats there. And of course, where 100% capacity now. You talk about things getting back to normal, Alex. Well, things are getting back to normal here with K-State athletic-wise. And while we know the rest of the homestand, the rest of the year for the Cats baseball-wise, we still don't know about football. Of course, we're going to talk about a whole lot more later on. But huge start. Good, great start, Alex, for K-State there in the game. The middle of the order providing the offense tonight for the Wildcats in this game here. Let's just run down the game stats here that I have pulled up on the list here. Of course, again, K-State, 4 hit runs, 8 hits, but it did commit an error, but 2 less than TCU did. 3 errors committed in this game for the Horned Frogs. 6 left on base for the Cats. 2 home runs for K-State tonight there. 3 RBIs, obviously. Strikeouts, both are high. 11 for TCU. K-State had 10. K-State had 2 stolen bases in the game as well. I'm trying to get the individual here for a second here. Yeah, and K-State runs scored. Zach Koskoska now leads the team with 50 runs scored. Cameron Thompson, 2nd. And then Dylan Phillips, the cleanup hitter, has 44. But overall, Alex, tonight, huge win for K-State there, getting that win there. Boasts their confidence in K-State. I read an article online last night, prior to the game here tonight. They're ready to make that run, trying to get themselves more postseason baseball past the Big 12 tournament here for them next week. But great start for K-State in this series, coming off a pretty much disappointing series against KU, which I just stated.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Huge win, obviously, for them tonight for a couple different reasons. Number one, it gets you to 30 wins, and we've been talking about that probably for the last couple.
There it is. Yeah, there it is.
Now, you know, can K-State get to 30 wins? And I wish that their record was better right now than it is. They're currently 30-20, and as you mentioned, 9-13 in Big 12 play. Hitting 30 wins when you look at where K-State was not that long ago in baseball, you know, it's something that you'll take. You know, it's definitely a step in the right direction for them. And you got to give Jordan Wicks credit. You know, K-State needed this game, and you're playing a really, really good TCU team, number one in Big 12 coming into tonight. And for him to come out and to have 7 2/3 on the mound, as you mentioned, with it was two runs and 5 hits, 7 strikeouts, leads the Big 12 in K's. So for him to be able to come in and give that performance in a critical time when K-State really needed it was huge, absolutely huge. And they were able to do enough offensively to win that game. Now, this was one that they absolutely needed because the Baylor series, I on the last podcast that we had, I said K-State needs to find a way. It's going to be hard, but they need to find a way to take 2 of 3. Now, they got a really good win in the second game against Baylor. It was 10-3. K-State was down, I think, 3-1 in that game. And then they ended up scoring, I think they might even be down in the 9th. And they ended up scoring at least 7 runs in the 9th and went up 10-3. Ended up winning that game by 7. So that was a great win. But if you look at the first and third games of the Baylor series, K-State got outscored 40-5. So that's not good. That's not good. You lose 17-2 and you lose 23-3. That is just horrific. So while K-State got that good win in the middle of that Baylor series, I cannot call that series successful. I mean, when you get outscored 45 in the other 2 games, I cannot call that successful. So the Baylor series was a dud. It really was. Now, Baylor's a good team, but that still, to me, was a little bit of an underachieving series. But it was nothing like the KU series. You know, you go in, you mentioned the doubleheader, you go in that doubleheader, and you don't score a run in either game. Get outscored 12-0. And in those 2 games, against the worst team in the Big 12, arch rival, 4 runs, no hits. You know, you end up having a no-hitter throw against you in 7 innings in one of those games. And that's just embarrassing, Eddie. What they did against KU is completely embarrassing. In those first 2 games, what they did in 2 of those 3 games against Baylor were embarrassing. So while they had that good win against Baylor, and while they had the good win against KU 6-2, to round things out, K-State really, it felt like, came limping back to Manhattan, which shouldn't be that big of a surprise because we've talked about how they've not been good on the road this year. Their record now on the road is 3-12. in the season. That's not good. That's obviously not a good record on the road. But as much as we've talked about how bad K-State's been on the road this year, we've talked about how good they've been at home. And now they are 23-6 at home. So they are a completely different team when they are at Toyton Family Stadium. And you see it against TCU. They took 2 of 3 against Texas Tech at home. Yep, they've just taken the first game against TCU at home. And they can. It feels like they really can play with anyone when they're at home. But when they go on the road, they're just a completely different team. So it's nice to be back home. It's nice to be back home and playing TCU in the confines of Toyton Family Stadium in Manhattan, Kansas, not down there in Fort Worth. So I'm with you, Eddie. Going into the series, I thought K-State's got to find a way to get 2 of 3, but I don't know how to feel about this series after what just happened in the last two. So a very pleasant surprise to see them come out and get the 4-2 win. We'll see if they can snag one of the other two. We'll see. TCU is really good, and I hope that they can. But we'll just have to see what happens. But I'm happy that they got at least one. You didn't want to get swept in that series going into the Big 12 Baseball Championship in Oklahoma City coming up the May week of, I guess it's next week.
Next week.
But you don't want to go in like that. You want to go in with some momentum into the Big 12 Baseball Championship. And if you can get one more against TCU and you can take 2 of 3 against a team that could end up number one, the one seed in that tournament, that would be a big confidence boost for the baseball team. So hitting 30 wins, that's a huge deal. Being able to get your 23rd win at home, that's also, a really big deal. And, taking the view from the balcony, you look at the K-State season, and I think that while we don't know how this story is going to end for them, I think you can look at it and you can see missed opportunities for them. There's no doubt that there's been missed opportunities for them in the season, and they could have done better in certain areas. But with that said, I think you can also see a lot of growth and a lot of potential within that K-State team as well, and reasons to be encouraged moving forward. So we'll just see how the rest of the season goes. Personally, I don't think that there's any deep postseason run in them just because they don't win when they're not in Manhattan. They don't win when they're not there. So if they can't play at Toyton Family Stadium, I don't have much confidence in them going out and winning a baseball game against a good team. Now, if they end up finding a way to, finding a way into the postseason somehow, and they end up playing some sort of regional game in Manhattan, then you may give them, a shot, but I don't really see how that scenario would happen. I could be wrong, but hard to see that type of scenario, but I just don't see a long postseason run in them just because they've been so bad, 3-12 on the road. Neutral fields, they've been 4-2. They've been 4-2 on the neutral field, but that's pretty small sample size, so pretty hard to get a good gauge of that. But point being, they just have not been good away from Toyton Family Stadium, so I don't see a deep run in them. I would love for them to surprise me, but if they could find a way to take advantage of these final two games that they have at Toyton, win a series against arguably the best team in the Big 12. You could say you beat two of the best teams in the Big 12 in two series at home in Texas Tech and TCU this year. I mean, that's a big building block for you moving forward. So great to see them get the win here tonight against TCU behind Jordan Wicks. Let's see if they can go get one with their main guy not going, with their horse not going. I do also want to say one other thing, Eddie. I did talk in the last podcast we had. We were talking about Jordan Wicks, and he was having his good outings, but K-State was not winning his games, and they needed to find a way to win his games, and they have done that twice since we've talked. They got a win in Waco against Baylor with him on the mound.
Yep.
It was coming from behind. But they did get a win there. Then they did get a win tonight against TCU with him on the mound. as well. They did lose one, obviously, as we know, sprinkled in there to a team that doesn't need to be named. But they have gotten some wins with him on the mound, and I thought that was important. If they wanted to win games down the stretch, they needed to find a way to win those games with him on the mound. They couldn't keep losing them 3-2, 2-1, 2-0. It feels like Noah Syndergaard is on the mound for K-State. I mean, my goodness, with the Mets, it feels like every time he goes out, he loses 1-0 with the Mets. It's kind of how it fell to Jordan Wick. So it was nice to see. K-State be able to get him a little bit of run support, and a couple games to get him some wins. So, or to get the team some wins. He didn't get the win in particular in that Baylor game, but to get the team some wins. So, kudos to them for that, and we'll see what they do the final two games.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Definitely been a tale of two seasons wrapped up in one. The K-State there, bad on the road. You brought some good points there, Alex, on that. But really good at home. So, but hey, you know, take the wins, what can you get them? K-State 4, TCU 2 of the recording of episode 52 of this podcast. Again, this episode will be up tomorrow afternoon around lunch hour prior to game 2. So we won't know, obviously, when this podcast comes out if they won't win both the rest get one or two games or not. But hey, and we got to take them as you can get them. And more importantly, yes, we did talk about K-State needed to get to 3 wins, and they did that tonight in this game. The opener against TCU 4-2. Cameron Thompson and Terrence Berlin each have a homered in the game for the Wildcats in this game. And yeah, I mean, the run support, I mean, we've been talking about for the last couple episodes now, Alex, especially with Jordan Wicks on the mound, one of the best pitchers in the conference, you've got to give him some runs. K-State did that tonight. TCU struck first in the second inning. K-State answered right back in the bottom half of the second inning. And then they went up in the bottom of the fourth inning with two more, with a 3-1 lead. And then TCU answered back, and then K-State punched back. That's what I take from this game tonight. Against the best team or conference-leading TCU. I mean, you get punched in the mouth, you punch right back, and that's what K-State did in this game. For whatever reason, Alex, K-State turns it on at home. You wish, if you look back at this season, I know we still have 2 games left, and of course the Big 12 tournament for Pete Hughes' team. You wish that they brought that same intensity to away from Twain Family Stadium. I don't understand that one quite a bit, but hey, it is what it is. So, but yeah, you look back at the season, what missed opportunities. Like KU, Baylor, that you mentioned, not playing well there. The Wichita State loss at home to Toyton, one of the few losses at home there that you lose to another rival, and then Wichita State. So there are some positives there for K-State, and then there's some negatives there that you take away from the season. But we're talking like the season's over, though, but it's not yet over yet. Proven by Jordan Wicks' team, the senior-led Jordan Wicks, tremendous performance tonight. And yeah, we'll have to sit back and wait out the rest of this series to see what K-State does here. Obviously, they're going to have to go away from Twain Family Stadium to play that Big 12 tournament. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see. And go ahead.
You know, I just want to say you made a great point, I thought, about K-State fighting back against TCU, because especially this time of the year, yeah, you're right. It's not like K-State got a 4-0, hunker down, and just kind of hold on for dear life and try to hold the lead. I mean, no, that was like going punch for punch with the best team in the Big 12. No, you're going to punch us. You're going to knock us off the field. We're going to come right back at you. Oh, you're going to come at us again. We're going to come right back at you again. And being resilient and relentless. I mean, those are the wins in baseball that really propel teams and allow them to get hot and get on a roll and really get confidence. You know, more than, you know, you load the bases, you get a grand slam, and then you just, like I said, you buckle down for 9 innings, you don't score, and you just hope your pitching holds you. You know, you hope your horse holds you down. You know, that's not how they won. That's not how they won this game. And I think that's something that they can really use and be able to carry it with them. But hey, TCU took some swings at us, and we swung back, and we absorbed them, and we were able to swing back, and we were able to win. And that is huge for your confidence. That is absolutely huge for your confidence. So I'm with you. That definitely should be the takeaway of that game. It'd be very interesting to see if it carries over into future games. But just the final point I wanted to make as well is you talked about some of those missed opportunities in the road. I'd even go back and look at the Oklahoma State and the Texas series. And two series on the road that K-State got swept in. And, you know, the Oklahoma State series, K-State has it close in two of the three games. In the Texas series, K-State has it close in the first game. And, you can't find a way to even get one, you know, or get two. Which, if you can do that, you don't start off 2-7 in Big 12 play. And you're playing catch up the entire season like K-State did. Even if you can just get 1 of 3 against Oklahoma State, 1 of 3 against Texas, instead of sitting at 2-7, you're sitting at 4-5. And you're not really playing kind of the catch up that K-State was playing. So I thought those two series really hurt them getting swept in both of them off the bat. I think it kind of knocked them on their heels. And they came home and they did work and they got hot and they just mowed teams down to Toyota Family Stadium for a month plus. And it was really impressive, and they kind of fought their ways back in. But for me, I look at that, I feel like that was kind of the biggest missed opportunity was that, hey, you don't even need to sweep. You don't even need to win these series. Just get one. Just tread water until you can get home. And they couldn't do that quite well enough. Because, I mean, even if you look now, if they get 1 of 3 against those two teams, you're sitting at 32-18 and 11-11 in conference play. And things really have a lot different outlook right now. Just two games like that. So, you know, I kind of view that as some missed opportunities. But look, we mentioned it. That's in the past. And in baseball, you can't think about yesterday. You can't think about the past. All you can think about is the present. And the season's still going on. And they still have things in front of them. And that's why it's important for them to continue to take that confidence that, hey, we can go blow for blow with TCU. And use that confidence to win a series against TCU. And win games in the Big 12 tournament down in Oklahoma City, and see if you can find yourself playing baseball beyond the Big 12 tournament. So, I think that is something that was very impressive tonight, and something that they should, you know, hopefully they can build on it. Like I said, we'll see. Well, by the time this podcast comes out, they probably won't know quite yet. But you'll be pretty close. When the podcast comes out, it'll be pretty close to seeing whether or not that carried over. But you're right. That is definitely the most impressive part, in my opinion, to that win as well.
Yeah, just looking at the rest of the Big 12 standings here real quick after tonight, obviously, TCU, Texas, pretty good record, 16-6, 15-6 respectively. Then Texas Tech, that only 12-9, that's okay. Then you look at the rest of the conference. Oklahoma State, 500, 12-12. Baylor, that you've talked about tonight, 10-11. Oklahoma, 9-12. K-State, 9-13. KU, West Virginia, 7-14. So, yeah, I mean, TCU, Texas, and Tech is kind of, I'm going to put them in the B column there, obviously. And then the rest of the conference, yeah, I don't think, at least for baseball, if we're talking baseball, the rest of the conference isn't very good. So K-State definitely missed some opportunities there. But hey, you take the victories whenever you can get them, and huge win tonight behind Jordan Wicks' strong performance there tonight. Almost pitched going 8 there, 7 2/3, or 7 1/3 there. And getting 7 Horned Frogs to strike out as well. Huge game, but Still, work ain't done yet for Pihuji Squad. They'll go at it again tomorrow night. And then, of course, to wrap things up with this regular season finale on Saturday afternoon, 4 p.m. at Toyn Family Stadium. If you're in the Manhattan area like I am, the Little Apple, if you're able to attend the games, please do that. Support the Wildcats here as they're trying to close out the 2020-2021 baseball season on a good note and try to get some momentum like AA's talked about and get some momentum for the Big 12 baseball tournament down there in Oklahoma City. This is the Purple Project Podcast, EG3, AA in the building here for episode 52. Kind of switching gears a little bit here. We're going to talk about, obviously, track and field is now in their postseason. Obviously, they ended women doing well, finishing runner-up spot in the conference. And by the way, we have been living under a rock there. The Big 12 track and field tournament was held right here in in Manhattan, Case last week. Good showings by both teams. Women finishing the runner-up spot, while the K-State men finished in the fourth spot. There was a daily about that. Go check that out as well. But Texas swept both, won both the men and women's Big 12 championships there. So the K-State doing battle in the NCAA's postseason there. So almost everybody is almost either in the offseason or doing summer workouts or getting ready to enter the postseason like the K-State baseball team is. But Alex, we kind of chatted a little bit and kind of want to get in this discussion about the state of the athletic program going into next season, obviously. Kind of a big year for all the athletics. Obviously, you know, track and field has done very well. It's a couple of note here. Golf has done okay. Not great, but okay. Soccer, again, is still working out the kinks a little bit. But you got your two... Ooh, my bad on that. But anyways, you know, your two big dogs, football and basketball. And we've kind of talked about it a little bit here and there throughout the duration of this podcast since we kicked off the podcast. And 2021, 2022, huge year coming up, obviously. Obviously, we're coming off the another losing season for Bruce Weber's team. Disappointing effort on a women's squad as well, and which brings up right off to my mind, right off the bat, Chrissy Carr transferring. That's another daily I did there on that. Huge loss for them, for the women on that front there. Football, there's a lot of questions surrounding that as well. Obviously, Gene Taylor getting extended. We've talked about that as well. So, man, a lot of question marks, Alex, going in to next fall and 2022 come. I know we're kind of in this back end second half of the month of May, but this is something that we all have to think about as fellow alumni of this university. And there's still a little talk here and there about future of this program, especially with football. We kind of talked about it a little bit off air. Kind of want to resume that talk a little bit there. You're coming off of a losing season, and I also listened to the piece that John Kurtz did that posted on his YouTube page there. K-State hasn't had losing seasons since 08 or 09, somewhere in that area, somewhere in there. Big year, and a couple people mentioned that you talked about it off recording. If they don't beat Stanford, obviously Stanford, I mean, we talked about that game as well, and we'll sure be talking about it some more as it gets closer and closer to football season. If K-State drops that game, we're way looking in the future, but they have a danger of going 2-4 and hurting and recruiting and all that stuff. So huge, Alex, coming up is this athletics program for our K-State team, K-State squads coming up here. And football, obviously a big, big, big one with coming in the back end of this pandemic. You're going to have fans. Again, we don't know. Obviously what the capacity holds. Hopefully we back to 100% like baseball. That'll be huge for Skylar Thompson and McPherson and those boys – They had to get that crowd support that we're used to seeing on game day and all, and that K-State fan experience that goes around. But man, this is gonna be critical year coming up when football rolls around in September against Stanford.
Yeah, you know, Gene Taylor, he got extended, but he's gonna work for his he's gonna work for his money potentially, because you're right. There are question marks in some of the biggest athletic programs within the athletic department. So you're 100% right with that. First, quickly before we get into that, want to give kudos to the track and field team, like you mentioned at first, to them and their performance. And I heard from afar that the event in Manhattan, or the events, I should say, in Manhattan were really a big success, and that there was really a lot of buzz around Manhattan. That it was definitely great for the university, great for the city, and obviously K-State did well. So you know that was great to see. And then you mentioned it with some of the teams. You mentioned the soccer team, and at some point they're going to have to show a little bit more improvement from what they're doing right now. But, you know, they still get a little bit of a pass because they're still a new team trying to get their footing a little bit. Created them from scratch. Like I said, they weren't even part of it. They weren't even a team yet when I graduated. They announced they were going to be a soccer team while I was there. And so, you know, they still probably have a little bit of a little longer leash. You talked about a couple other sports, but there's no doubt that the warm seats are really on the two basketball programs and the football program. And, you know, with football, Jokic, he's talked a lot about this. You mentioned that. He's really posted some YouTube videos and some things on K-Man that have really highlighted some points. And you mentioned that Stanford game off the bat in particular. And he said you never want to put too much pressure on one game. But if you're K-State and you come out and you lose this game against Stanford, number one, fans are probably going to be ticked because you gave the game up at home. And they may be saying, well,
that's another thing. That's another thing.
If we had a game in Manhattan, maybe we would have won that game. So,
that's another thing.
You may not be on the, you may not be in the best side of your fans. Number two, you're going down to the mega site for recruiting. You know, you're going down to Jerry World in prime time, in Texas, in Dallas, the biggest city in the whole state of Texas. Like, that is, it's going to be recruits galore for K-State. And he mentioned it. Chris Klieman hasn't recruited the way that some people thought he might have. And there could be reasons for it. COVID could be part of it. There could be other factors that are a part of it, but K-State hasn't recruited the level that maybe all of us envisioned and thought. And look, that doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with recruiting classes. You know, Bill Snyder never had any sexy recruiting classes, and he found a way to win, so that's ultimately what matters. But, you know, he said you can look around the Big 12 landscape, and there are teams who are doing a better job recruiting than K-State. And so, if you go down to Texas, you've got this great opportunity, and if you blow it, it could really hurt recruiting. And then it could start you 2-4. And he said, if K-State, man, if K-State starts 2-4, I just imagine what the fans would be saying if they start 2-4, you're 0-3 in Big 12 play. Because just a reminder, K-State opens the season against, and I can't remember the order, but it's in some order of Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and Iowa State, I believe. So, potentially the top three teams in the Big 12. Definitely probably the top two in Oklahoma and Iowa State is probably the way it's looking early on. And so it's going to be brutal for K-State. And you really would have the potential to start in a bad place. And this is a season where there's kind of a magnifying glass on Chris Klieman and the football program, because he overachieved in that first season. And it was just fantastic for K-State with a roster that didn't have a lot of talent. And then in the second year, K-State underachieved. You know, people are kind of expecting more from them in that second season. But then you look at it, and you're like, you know, well, he didn't have Skyler. There was COVID. K-State did look good when they were at full strength, when they were healthy. So there's kind of an unknown, Eddie, going into this third year on what they're going to be. People kind of don't know. I've heard some people say, oh, K-State's only won 5 games. And I've heard other people say, this K-State team could win 9-10 games. I mean, it is completely just wide open what I am hearing from people on how good this football team could be. So the Stanford game is really going to set the tone for it. Because on the flip side, if you win the Stanford game, think about that momentum, you know, that you carry, what you do for recruiting, what you do with your momentum. All of a sudden, things just look totally different from this vantage point. If you get that win, you know, you don't want to put too much pressure in one game. You know, if you lose your first game of the season, that's not a doomsday. That's no reason for doomsday. But it may not be your typical home opener. You know, there's definitely a lot more riding on this opening game than there would be in maybe some in the past. And so, it's going to be a big one for them and a big one for Chris Klein, and a game that they really need to find a way to win. And I just think it makes the game that much bigger, that much more exciting. But yeah, when you look at the football program and really, you know, look at it from a, you know, kind of from further away, this is a big season for Coach Klein, because like I said, you've kind of seen a good season and you've seen the bad season. And you're kind of like, well, which one is it? You know, which one is he? Personally, I think that he is more the coach that we saw from the first season than the second season. I think that's more of what you're going to see from K-State football on a consistent basis. I really do. I think that last year, when K-State was healthy, they looked good. They beat Oklahoma on the road. They did. They had a clunker. We know they had a clunker to open the season up. but after that clunker, they looked good. They did look good, and they looked good against Tech until Skyler went down, and they crumbled late. But let's not try to act like they didn't. They weren't missing 8 million players from COVID at that point. Granted, I said it then. It's not an excuse. Every coach was dealing with it, but. That did seem to be when K-State got hit the hardest. So, I don't know. Last season kind of seemed funky to me. I think Chris Klieman and K-State football is going to be more of what we saw in the first season. But we need to see it. Because the last thing that we have in our minds, Eddie, is Texas scoring 69 points on K-State in Manhattan. I think that was it. I think it was 69-31. Or maybe it was 62-39. I think it was 69-31. Either way, it wasn't good. Maybe it was 59-31.
That was in the 60s. I'm pretty sure it was in the 60s somewhere.
I think it was in the 60s. I think it was, too. Either way, Eddie, not good. When you're trying to think, was it the 50s or the 60s?
I'm looking up right now.
So, point being, the last thing that we saw about K-State football was pretty embarrassing. It was pretty damn embarrassing. So, there's not a very... And it was so bad, Eddie, that you went on the podcast and said, I don't want to see this team in the bowl. I don't want to see them. I don't want to see it in a bowl. Just go to the offseason. That's how bad they were playing. So, we haven't seen K-State win a football game since October against TCU, I believe. So, that's been a long time. So, while I think that Coach Klieman is the coach from the first season, he's going to have to come out and prove it, because K-State was just getting trucked in some of those games, and you were seeing some of the things that you weren't seeing the first season. Because when Coach Klein came in, the biggest thing I said was, I just want K-State to be competitive, because they got to a point with Coach Snyder where when they were playing the big boy in the Big 12, I mean, you could mark it down that they were going to lose a game 59-14, 45-7, you know, 47-10. I mean, you could mark it down as a blowout loss, pretty much. And it was frustrating, because, you know, this is K-State football. That's not what they do. This is not what we're about. And when Coach Klieman came in, I said, I just want K-State to be competitive and against everyone in the Big 12. That's really the biggest thing I want right now. And that's exactly what they were in that first season. They were competitive against everyone they played. And you didn't win every game, but you go 8-4. You play everyone hard, you have a team that lacks talent but is totally bought in, and then you get this second season where all of a sudden you're having issues in the locker room, and you're having issues you weren't having the first year, and all of a sudden you see the blowouts begin to pop up. You get blown out and shut out against Iowa State. You lose. You let Texas score 60-some points in your house. You let these things happen. But yet, you just about knock off Oklahoma State at home with backup QB. You go on the road and beat the Big 12 champs. So, you got it in it. So, man, it's just with football, it is the biggest question mark. It really is just the biggest question mark. And this season is huge for Coach Klieman, because whatever happens this season will really determine his fate in that fourth season. Because he's either going to be feeling good going into the fourth season, or he's going to have a nice, nice hot seat that he is sitting on. One of the two. Because I don't think that, another below 500 season is going to be something that will go down very well to K-State fans. I don't think that they're going to digest that very well, especially with what we've been going on with the men's basketball program. I think they want someone to have a record above 500 around here. And so if the football team can't do that, it's going to get real hot real fast. And look, K-State just signed Coach Klieman this last year to an extension. So, they wanted to lock their guy up. They didn't want anyone to poach him, and rightfully so, after looking at what he did the first year. But, it'll be interesting. But I still have confidence in Coach Klieman. I really do. So that's kind of where I stand with the football team. I think the same questions, obviously, pop up with the basketball program. You mentioned the women's team and Jeff Mitty. I think that this is the make it or break it year for him. And then with men's basketball, I think it's make it or break it year for Bruce. I think it's the make it or break it year for both of those guys. And with Coach Klieman, I still think he's a year away from being in that position. But I do think that those other two coaches are on the hot seat. I actually read an article where they were talking about coaches on the hot seat in college basketball. Like, which coach is the highest on the hot seat? And the article I read, Bruce was literally number one on the list of like 20 coaches. Bruce needs to, I've talked about this on past episodes, he's going to have to come out and finish at least middle of the pack of the Big 12. He is. I mean, if K-State doesn't come out and finish anything better than 6th, 7th, I mean, if they finish anywhere 8th through 10, I don't see how Bruce survives that, because I think that K-State needs to at least be on the bubble for Bruce to be coming back, if not make the tournament. He might have to make the tournament to come back, but at the very least, he has to be on the bubble, because if K-State's not even on the bubble, I don't see any way an LD comes back. I don't see any way how he survives that. And the reason that Bruce has gotten the leash that he's gotten, in my opinion, Eddie, is because he's won two Big 12 championships, and he's gone to an Elite Eight. So he's kind of, he's kind of built in the years that, kind of those rebuild years, if you want to call it that, and the patience with Gene. I think that's one of the differences between him and Coach Klieman. Coach Klieman's had an 8-win season, but, I mean, that's really it. Bruce has won a couple Big 12 championships. He's gone to the Elite Eight, so he's kind of got a little longer leash than Coach Klieman. That's why I think that you've seen him have a couple bad years, and now he's just entering hot seat, where Coach Klieman could enter it a little sooner, in my opinion. But I really do think that that's what they have to finish. And then, flip into the women's team, they've got to finish at least middle of the pack as well. And I think it's the same thing for them as the men's. I think at least need to be on the bubble. You've got a roster that is, in my opinion, NCAA tournament capable. You're competing against teams who are in the NCAA tournament. And you just couldn't close games out for whatever reason. You've got one of the best players in the Big 12 on your team. And look, there's some coaches that have left. The Big 12 on the women's side. And there could be more opportunities for wins as well. In fact, I think that Tim Fitzgerald, if I recall, Eddie, said that he thought Jeff Mitty now had the most coaching experience in the Big 12 of all the coaches that are currently head coaches in the Big 12 now.
Hmm.
He was either first or second, but I think he was first. I think he said when you combine his time at K-State and TCU, he had the longest tenure of head coaching experience in the Big 12. Like I said, don't quote me on that, but it was either first or second. I think it was first. So point being, he's been there and he's done that. And this is his moment. This is his moment. And if he can't take advantage of it, I think K-State will go in a different direction. I like Jeff Mitty. I really do. But when you've got the talent that he has, and you've got one of the best players in the Big 12 on your team, and you can't find a way to take advantage of it, that's a tough pill to swallow, man. I mean, that really is a tough pill to swallow. And I think it's the exact same thing with Coach Kleiman. You got one of the best running backs in not just the Big 12, but you got one of the best running backs, according to many college football experts and college football analytics, one of the best running backs in the country on your team. And if you can't win with him, that's even bigger problem than if you were just losing with guys that weren't performing. So I think that just magnifies it that much more for Coach Kleiman and Coach Mitty, because they have two superstars on their team. And look, Bruce may have one of Nigel Pack too. We'll just have to see. But it's an interesting time for K-State sports. And I do think I'm optimistic about all three programs, Eddie. I really am. I think that they all have the ability to turn things around from this past season and to get back on the right feet, or get back on their feet, I guess I should say. And I think you and I have the opportunity to talk about a lot more wins next year than we did this past year. But we've got to see it. And if we don't see it, I think two coaches are gone, and I think it puts another coach on the hot seat. Especially, and this is where I'll loop the part in, and John Kurtz mentioned it, when K-State had narrowed down, according to John Kurtz, he said K-State, according to his sources, had it narrowed down to two guys, Chris Kleiman, Neil Brown. And Neil Brown.
There it is. There it is.
Chris Kleiman. And he's out recruiting him. He's out coaching him. He's beating him. And his teams are better. It's a bad look. It's a bad look. And it could just put even more pressure on Gene to do something if it becomes more apparent that he made the wrong hire. So, it will be interesting. It will be interesting to see the way that things played out. But I mentioned it to you before the podcast, that Neil Brown is recruiting better. He's beaten Coach Kleiman twice. Coach Kleiman did have the better team the first season. Neil Brown had the better team the second season. So we're going to learn a lot the third season. And you hate to compare coaches like that. You really do. But it's hard not to. When you had it narrowed down to two guys, and the other guy you had narrowed down to entered the Big 12 at the exact same time, and a program that was in pretty much the same place as K-State. So it's just interesting to see. But I'm confident in all three of the programs they can turn it around. I also know that probably not all three of them will turn it around. So I feel like two of the three probably will. I'm not exactly sure who will be the one that kind of doesn't make the turn or doesn't make the cut. But I do remain optimistic that they can get back on track, those three programs. And I'm probably most optimistic about the men's basketball team and the football team. I would probably put the football team ahead of the men's basketball team, because I really do think that once Coach Kleiman can just get, Eddie, once he can just get back to a regular season, he's got his quarterback, he's got a healthy team, no more COVID, no more locker room problems. I keep hearing all these stories now about all these locker room problems he was having, the players not bought in, and all these different things. Once you get all that out, you've got guys that are bought in, you're not dealing with the COVID cramp, you're not dealing with a quarterback with a broken collarbone or whatever the hell he had. You know, once all that's gone, I really think that we'll see K-State back more like the team we did the first season. will make a bowl game this year. I really don't see them going below 500 unless things really, really go wrong. Like the train really comes off the rails in regards to injuries or something. But I think they are going to be more of a 7-5, 8-4 team. And that is kind of how I feel they're gonna be this year. So, I really do feel probably the most optimistic about them. And I do think that the men's team is going to be around middle of the pack in the Big 12 and on the bubble. But I'm probably less confident about that than I am the football team. I think I would legitimately be surprised if that team finished below 6-6. I really do think that. I'm optimistic that they can come in, they can do things, that we're going to see a good Skylar Thompson, that we're going to see an offense that's more efficient, and a defense that doesn't give up as many points and is more consistent on that end of the ball. So, but it'll be interesting to see. And Gene, like I said at the beginning of this, he's going to make his money because he's going to have to. He very well may have to make some tough decisions, I think. We'll just have to see how that goes.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Past 10 o'clock here, Manhattan time, here on Purple Project Podcast, episode 52. Another podcast here as we're recording here. K-State baseball coming off game one victory over TCU, the conference leading TCU on Frogs tonight, here in the middle of a good discussion here. And I did look up, double check that score from last season, from last fall, and that was the correct score, 69-31 there. Texas pretty much scored, did whatever they wanted on offense there against the K-State that did not very much show up. They should have stayed home, like I said in that podcast there. So, yeah, I mean,
it was the best Will Howard played all year, and everyone forgets because the defense gave up 69 points.
Yeah, that, yep, everyone forgets that part because, how horrible.
Will Howard played well. He actually did play well in that game.
Yeah, how horrible they played. But, yeah, just getting it, just turning this thing full circle, because we'll talk about more about Bruce Weber and the basketball team down the line somewhere if news does come out about that. But, yeah, we're going to be talking about football throughout the summer like we did when we started the podcast and getting for this matchup with Stanford. I mean, it's good. That's
game,
also
a game to kick off season.
Yeah, it's a great game to kick off a season. And the game that some people still griping that should be a home game. I mean, the last time we had a meaningful home game, you got to go out of conference anyways. You got to go back. I might be wrong, but you got to go back to probably Auburn a few years back. Huge ball game, ESPN ball game. I don't think College Game Day wasn't here. I don't think that
they,
was.
They weren't there, but I remember that game very well, Eddie, because in my 4 years at K-State, that was my senior year, it was a Thursday night ESPN game. And it was, I mean, the Bill wasn't even, there were two moments that I remember distinctly at the Bill in my college career. One was when K-State won the Big 12 when they beat Texas.
I was there for that one.
My sophomore year, yes. That environment and Auburn, the Auburn game, were the two environments that were really, they really stood on their own pedestal, so to speak. I mean, those were the two games that I went to where that stadium was rocking at a different level. And yeah, that Auburn game was huge because Auburn was ranked fifth in the country. They just had played the national championship the year before. They were fifth in the country. K-State was in the top 20. And it was a huge game. It was a huge game. And it was just electric. Just electric there. And it ended up being a great game. K-State should have won. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole right now. K-State should have won. Tyler Lockett dropped a touchdown in the end zone. I think K-State threw two interceptions, and Jake Waters did. Both were off deflections, and K-State ended up losing that game by like 7 points. It was, yeah. But anyway, I'm not going to go down that road, Eddie. I think I'm on that road. It was a good game. The Bill was rocking. And I'm with you. I don't think that there's been a game to that of that magnitude since. I mean, they've had... They had Mississippi State. They had Mississippi State a few years ago.
They lost that game because I was in the stadium for that. They lost that
game. They did. They had. That was ugly. I was in Dallas Love Field, the airport, watching it on the TVs, and I was glad that I wasn't playing for the second half of that game. But yes, they had that game. That was a big game because I think Mississippi State was ranked.
Mississippi State was
when they came to Manhattan, but that wasn't like Auburn. That was not like Auburn. Auburn, they were a national championship contender. They just went to the national championship. They were ranked in the top five. They haven't had a game like that. Granted, the Stanford game probably would be more probably on the level of like that Mississippi State game. But it probably would be a little bigger than that. It probably would be a little bigger than the Mississippi State game was. You're right. There's fans that are legit upset. I mean, legit upset about that decision. And look, I get it. If I was K-State, I would have done the exact same thing. It's the better business move to go down there to Jerry World. You get more exposure. You get better access to recruits. You're still likely going to have a home game. You still have seven other home games. And so, from a business decision, and you make a ton of money after a COVID season where you were short on money, I can't blame them at all for going. I would have done the same thing. But, like I said, if you lose, there's going to be some fans that are going to say, if you would have just had the game in Manhattan, just would have never happened. So, forget you, K-State. Forget you, Chris Klieman and Gene Taylor. I mean, you'll hear that if K-State loses. To Stanford, but hopefully that doesn't happen. You know, hopefully they win, and we're celebrating. And K-State has the top 10 recruiting class in the country the next year because they just got all these recruits from this game in Dallas against Stanford. And then Neil Brown's going to be like, "Dang, my recruiting class isn't the best anymore."
Excuse me, I was just
you like down. The picture I painted there for you, Eddie?
Yeah, I just got done reading a tweet that's not K-State related anyways. But yeah, Stanford, yeah, it's a big game. A lot more coming up down the line this summer and leading up to that game, obviously. I was in, kind of finishing up my point here real fast. Yeah, I was in the stadium, in the booth, actually, for that Texas game there. And then, of course, I remember that Auburn game as well. Was not at the stadium, but was watching it. And yeah, just missed opportunities. That was a little frustrating game. Yeah, I'm not gonna go down that rabbit hole either. Yeah. That's another podcast that we can probably go over that at some point. Probably not.
Still a great game.
Still a good game. This is an important game for the K-State football program. Go down, we've talked about this before, you go down to Arlington where pretty much Dallas-Fort Worth has the biggest K-State alumni. Shout out to Fort Worth, Dallas, K-State Nation representing down there. Stanford, by the way, is coming off a shortened season, obviously, with the pandemic. Stanford was 4-2 this year, obviously playing all their games in conference there, so there's a whole debate about that, not getting all about that, but big time game, and we'll see where that time slot lands. That's the other question that we're going to be kind of pondering on this summer, is what time slot this is going to be at. Will this be a prime time game or kind of that late afternoon game? So we'll see. I mean, that question will be answered. Also, still waiting the whole capacity. Speaking of Bill Snyder Family Stadium, I'm anxious to get back there, hopefully with the full stadium, back with a full stadium experience. I mean, it's nothing like the game day or game night primetime experience at Bill Snyder Family Stadium, especially for a big time game to build up and everything that goes along with that. So definitely this team needs it. The coaching staff needs it. You know the players feed off that crowd. It's college. Everybody feeds off the home crowd there as well. So, I mean, as much as I wanted that game to be here, here at Manhattan, it's good for them to go down to their other home in Arlington to go down to Jerry World and to play that game to open up the 2021 season. So that's going to be big for them. A lot more coming up on the Pro Project Podcast about that as well. I do here real quickly here as we begin to close out episode 52, talk about there was some Jordy Nelson news here. Of course, former K-State Wildcat, great walk-on wide receiver there. His event coming up this fall, September 12th here, as I'm trying to look for it myself here. I read it yesterday. Let's see if I can do two things at once. Obviously, okay, yeah, so the inaugural Jordy Nelson Legends Classic, Alex, September 12th. This is a softball game. We'll be here during the beginning of the football season. Just to read off the details here and summarize for him, the 11-year NFL veteran Jordy Nelson, also former K-State standout football player, will be joined by some of his former teammates as well as other fellow Wildcat legends for a tremendous weekend as he will host his first ever Jordy Nelson Legends Classic softball game presented by People's State Bank on September 12th. I believe that's, I just changed it to that, but I believe that's the weekend after the first game against Stanford. I believe that same weekend. I got to double check that, but anyways, so that's huge for them. Some more details about this. Of course, this is going to be held. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. So that's what I thought. Okay, so it is the same weekend as the first home opener for Southern Illinois that Saturday. And, of course, it's going to feature some K-State legends, folks, including Kevin Lockett, David Allen, Michael Bishop, John McGraw, Jimmy Mendez, Martin Gramatica, Kendra Wecker, the basketball player, outstanding women's basketball player. And that's a hard-hitting lineup right there for you, Alex. That's hard-hitting. Obviously, full rosters featuring the Wildcats for numerous spots will be announced later this summer. So once we have that, we'll bring it to you right here on Triple P. And also proceeds for this event go to Manhattan Young Life. And also, they will fund a K-State football scholarship reserved for a walk-on, which Jordy was during his time at K-State. And then Jordy Nelson in a comment here. Quote, Emily and I are excited to host this event the day after the Southern Illinois game. And he goes on to say, quote, these softball games were extremely impactful in Green Bay, in the Green Bay community, which he was outstanding for the Green Bay Packers and the drama queen of Aaron Rodgers. Now, again, that. Yeah. Oh, and we wanted to bring that same excitement and opportunity to a community that we all love and call home. Our plan is for this to be an annual event that will continue to grow and involve Wildcat greats from all sports. That's what we talk about, all sports here on the Pro Project Podcast. We know that it will be exciting for the players and fans, but most importantly, our motivation comes from using this as a platform to help local charities and nonprofit organizations and assist in the funding of a football scholarship for a walk-on player. We look forward to spending the day with the best fans in college athletics, especially endpoint. So Jordy's pumped, the family's pumped, we're pumped about it. Yeah, Jordy, now this is great. Obviously, they're going to try to create a scholarship for a walk-on through this event. Very awesome stuff from Jordy Nelson. Alex, any other thoughts on this event coming up this fall, right after the first home opener, quote-unquote, against Southern Illinois?
Yeah, you know, my mom actually was the one who broke the news to me. She sent me the link to the article that Kellis Robinette wrote on it. And I read it.
just thought, wow, this is so cool, you know, that Jordy's doing this. Because I've seen events like this before, where, you know, you have these kind of these celebrity or these legend softball games where, you know, they're raising money for charity and then creating these types of opportunities. And, you know, maybe not specifically a spot for a walk-on scholarship, but are, you know, creating some sort of opportunity that's like a life-changing opportunity. And so they're always really cool events. And for K-State to have their own, to be able to tie it into that opening weekend festivities, I guess you could say there, the weekend of the home opener against Southern Illinois, is really cool. And you mentioned star-studded lineup. I mean, Michael Bishop back in the bill. I mean, come on. I mean, who doesn't want to see Michael Bishop back in the bill? And Martina Gramatica, you know, of course, who doesn't want to see Martina Gramatica kick a 60-plus yard field goal? Granted, he won't be kicking a 60-plus yard field goal, but still, who doesn't want to see him in the pill? It's Kevin Lockett, David Allen. I mean, these are K-State greats, and you can see them with Jordy Nelson. And you mentioned, obviously, Kendra Recker, who is a tremendous basketball player for K-State in her time. And so, star-studded lineup. Tickets seem to be cheap. I think they were, what was it? They were in the outfield. They started as like low, yeah, as low as $5 for K-State students, and outfield sections run 8 to 12, and sections by home plate are 15 to 20. And if you want to sit inside, if you want to sit by home plate and have a Jordy Nelson autographed softball, $75. So, I mean, yeah, heck yeah. I mean, what an amazing opportunity. What an amazing opportunity for these to raise money, put it towards towards something that's really going to make an impact, and then potentially create a scholarship. And also, you're creating great memories. These are fun games to watch. They really are fun to watch. You may think, oh, they're kind of dry, they're kind of boring. They're not. They really are. They're really fun to watch. And I this one, I think, is going to be the exact same thing. So, if you're in Manhattan, go out, go support it, and go watch the K-State greats. You're going to have a good time. Your money's going to be going to a great cause. It doesn't get any better than that. So, so happy for Jordy. So happy for K-State for this event. I can't wait to see how it goes. I have a feeling we're going to see a lot of good highlights come from that game on the social media and on the social media platforms. And, just good for Jordy. That's Jordy being Jordy, Eddie. I mean, that's what that is. I mean, that's what he does. He's got a big heart. He loves K-State, and it's just showing through and through here. So, you know, couldn't be any happier for him. So happy that this came together, and we're lucky to have Jordy as part of the K-State family. And and you know, we should need to go out and continue to support him.
Yep, I found out about this. My wife sent me the link, and that's how I found out about it. I believe it was Monday or Tuesday when I found out about it via the link sent by my wife. So, yeah, definitely a great opportunity. The inaugural softball game by Jordy Nelson coming up this September. That should be a good weekend, of course. Coming full circle with the home, quote-unquote, home opener with Southern Illinois that Saturday. So, fun weekend coming up, the home opening weekend for K-State football coming off that Stanford game. Hopefully, it'll be a good one. You talked about that already tonight. Hopefully, we'll be talking about more wins in Season 2 on this podcast than what we went through that 4-1, and then all of a sudden the bottom falls out. So hopefully we'll be talking a different tune coming this fall here in the Purple Project podcast. So we'll see what happens with that. So a lot to look forward to, of course, with the Stanford game, and then this weekend, the second weekend of the football season there here in Manhattan, the Little Apple. A lot to look forward to there with the Jordy Nelson Legends Softball in Classic, the inaugural softball classic here in Manhattan, folks. Again, folks, recording on a Thursday night. K-State baseball coming off a 4-2 victory against the Big 12 leading TCU Horned Frogs tonight behind Jordan Wicks. Stellar outing tonight here, and this podcast will come out around lunch hour, so we won't know, obviously, what Game 2 will hold or Game 3 for the rest of the series. K-State baseball will look to build some momentum for the Big 12 tournament next week there as well, as we start to close out this podcast here. Alex, any final thoughts here before we close out here? Obviously, the NBA playoffs officially started this week, obviously. So I know your Blazers. I don't know how you feel about your Blazers in these playoffs. But any final thoughts about that, or the Blazers' chances to go deep?
Yeah. Well, first off, I only caught the second half. Not even the second half. Fourth quarter. I only caught the fourth quarter of the Warriors-Lakers game. But, man, the fourth quarter was fire, man. It was just great. I really wish I could have watched that whole game. I really do.
Me too. Yep. Yeah.
That game was as advertised. And, man, those two teams playing in a play-in, it doesn't get me even. I literally sat down with popcorn in the fourth quarter and started to watch. So it was great, and obviously it lived up to the hype there in the fourth quarter. So the play-in has been a huge success, despite what some people want to say. And the play-in has been a huge success, and we got a great matchup there. We're going to get a great matchup with the Warriors and the Grizzlies tomorrow, where you're going to have Steph going against John Morant, and so that's going to be entertaining. And I don't know what happened tonight. There was Wizards and
the Wizards, it's
not as fun as the West. I'm sorry, and nothing against the East. It's not as fun as the West. Seems like what the Warriors, yeah, they're not the Warriors, the Wizards. They won by almost 30 points, and they're moving on because the Pacers don't. They have no business of being in the play-in. So whatever, but the West, it's good. Good stuff in the play in the West. In regards to the Blazers, obviously I'm happy with where they're at. You know, I'm happy that they didn't have to play in the play-in. I'm happy that they don't have to play the Clippers in the first round, because that was my fear. They were able to dodge them, and they're going to play the Nuggets in the first round. I think that's a lot better matchup for them, just because the Blazers beat the Nuggets in the Western Conference semis a couple years ago in seven games. So they've done it. They've beaten this team in the playoffs the last time they played them. And the team's pretty similar now. I think that the Blazers, if anything, are maybe even a little bit better than that team that went to the Western Conference Finals a couple years ago. And the Nuggets, I don't think, are quite on the level that they were, actually, a couple years ago, because they don't have Jamal Murray. They don't have a couple of those guys that really slowed Dame down. So I look at them, and Dame has a week to rest. That's the other thing. The Blazers have a week to rest. And so when you give the Blazers that type of offense a week to rest, I think it can really create a headache in a series. It seems like they kind of slip in the playoffs when they begin to get worn down. And so I really think it's a good matchup for the Blazers, and I think the Blazers are going to win it in six. That's what I've got. And then go on to lose in the second round to whoever they play. I don't know. It would be either the, the Lakers or the Suns. Yeah, neither one of those is a very good matchup, so probably wouldn't pick them against either one of them. But I think that I have them in six. Wouldn't surprise me at all if the Nuggets won the series. I mean, Nuggets got the MVP this year, and Nikola Jokic, in my opinion, and Michael Porter Jr.'s come on, had a tremendous year. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if they did take care of the Blazers. But look, the last time they played, the Blazers won by 16. Granted, the Nuggets weren't probably putting their best foot forward, but even when the Nuggets starters were in there, the Blazers were really taking it to them. And so, I just think a healthy Blazers team against that Nuggets team is an advantage for the Blazers. So I'm encouraged about that.
and hopefully they can come out and they can perform well. It's frustrating that they're a 6 seed. I feel like they're a top 4 team in the West. They were so... Injuries just got them. Injuries just got them this year, and they missed Dame in parts of the season. They missed C.J. McCollum for extended periods of time. They missed Yusuf Nurkic for extended periods of time. Really hurt them. So, if it weren't for those injuries, I think they would have ended up probably... they definitely would have been 5, because they finished tied with the Mavericks, who were 5. I think that they could have probably slid into even 3 or 4 if they were healthy. I think they could have finished 4 or 5 games better than they did, which is what they would have had to do. But look, they are where they are, you know, and then they're not a championship contender, you know, this year. But I do like their matchup. Eager to see it. Eager for the NBA playoffs. So. There you have it. What's Alex looking forward to? He's looking forward to getting the NBA playoffs going, because the NBA regular season gets a little stagnant, it gets a little boring, and then the playoffs usually come and it ramps things up, and the playoffs get good. They get good, and then they kind of get to me, actually. I feel like the NBA playoffs get a little more boring almost as they go on, because once the teams that you know are going to get there end up there, I'm just kind of like, well, now I'm losing a little interest, because every year these same teams end up there. It's almost like the college football playoff a little bit. It's kind of like, well, you know, oh, it's the Lakers and the Nets. Again, like, oh, shocker. I mean, that's when I actually lose a little interest personally. You just don't see teams kind of slip through the cracks the way you do in the NFL. The way you do in the college basketball, so you just don't see that there. But still, it's always fun watching the NBA in the playoffs, and I'm looking forward to it. Obviously, baseball, you know, continue watching baseball. The Royals about made me lose my mind when they lost 11 straight, but they're back to winning again, so I can breathe again, fortunately. But yeah. Yeah, that's really it. That's a very long-winded answer, Eddie, on how I feel about the Blazers and the Royals and the NBA playoffs and the MLB.
well, that's... I will just leave that right there. So, definitely a lot there in that. So, we'll see what happens with K-State, kind of to turn it back to K-State here. K-State, TCU, Game 2 tomorrow night at Point Family Stadium in the Red... And in Game 3, Saturday afternoon, the track team doing battle in the postseason. They're going to be getting started this weekend as well. We'll have more updates coming up on the Pro Project Podcast daily for that as well. So stay tuned for that as well. So I got a busy weekend myself, and then I'm going on vacation next week, all the way through toward the end of the following week as well. So definitely got a lot going on here at this end of the camp. So a lot to look forward to, and we'll see what baseball does. That's kind of the big thing now going on in track and field. Golf is pretty much done. Pretty much all the sports are done except track and field and the base K-State baseball. So we'll see. Stay tuned, folks, for Triple P for a lot more coverage. If we do have any breaking news from football or even basketball, for that matter, of all the transfer movement from the transfer portal, we'll talk about it here on the next edition of the podcast, which should be Alex in 2 weeks. We'll hope to get together when I get back from good old Wyoming. So we'll try to reconvene then, sir. All right, folks, K-State Nation's a wrap for another edition of the Triple P, the Purple Project Podcast. Another episode in the books, episode 52 of the podcast. Alex Aiden, appreciate your help as always. Eddie Greer III saying thank you for tuning in to the weekly edition of the podcast. Remember, this will be out around lunch. Should be out around lunchtime, and we'll see what K-State baseball does with TCU Friday and Saturday. I told you, Alex, I have a surprise for you at the end. Got a new closing music here to play that closes out. Yep.
Look, I'm looking for. I've been wanting to look. So, what's the surprise? It's about to end the show. What's the surprise? Okay, I'm eager to hear the closing music.
All right, and with that, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in with the Purple Project Podcast. I'm going to play the new closing music to the podcast. We will talk to you next time on the Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition. We'll talk to you then.
Are found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, and more. We'll talk to you on the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.